Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
A bishop of the revolution, a new saint for Mexico, is a model of courage and faith in the face of persecution. And becoming Catholic, why do so many people choose the church? Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure with you for a look at these stories over the next half hour. Thanks for joining me.
Ad honorem sancte individue trinitatis, ad exaltationem fidei catholice, et vitae christiane incrementum, auctoritate Domini nostri Iesu Christi.
October 15th, 2006, presiding High Mass in a St. Peter's Square packed with pilgrims from across the globe, Pope Benedict XVI pronounced the formula of canonization, proclaiming four new saints of the Catholic Church. Among them, Mexican Bishop Rafael Guizar Valencia of Veracruz.
Beatus Rafaelem Guizar Valencia.
Il Beato Raffaele Guizar Valencia è stato un sacerdote e un vescovo di ardente carità pastorale e di eccezionale spirito di sacrificio.
The story of the new saint, Bishop Rafael, was not new to the thousands of Mexicans gathered in St. Peter's Square for his canonization. Born in 1877, Rafael Guizar was one of 11 children whose parents were wealthy landowners. Shortly after his ordination to the priesthood, Father Rafael founded the Congregation of Missionaries of Our Lady of Hope and used his family's money to found schools for poor children. He also founded seminaries and colleges for boys. Veronica Scarisbrick tells us more about this extraordinary religious.
The Mexican Revolution and the persecution of the Catholic Church in Mexico set Father Rafael on a run for his life. And for several years he was forced into exile. He returned to his country as a bishop in 1920, a time when government persecution of the church had escalated. And he was forced to train his seminarians underground. In 1931, the governor of Veracruz ordered a crackdown on priests. There could be only one priest for every 100,000 Catholics. Bishop Rafael closed tight all his churches in protest, and the governor issued orders to shoot him on sight. But Rafael was not to be frightened. He stormed into the governor's palace and walked right into the man's office, fearing the kind of public uprising the murder of this priest would provoke. The governor revoked the death sentence. Bishop Rafael was able to continue the work of the church, but under constant government opposition and harassment.
Bishop Rafael died of natural causes in 1938. He was beatified by Pope John Paul II in 1995. But how did Pope Benedict remember Bishop Rafael Guizar de Valencia at his canonization? Chris Altieri filed this report.
The Pope said Rafael Guizar Valencia, Bishop of Veracruz in Mexico, was a tireless preacher of the gospel to the people of his diocese. Pope Benedict recalled one of the holy bishop's favorite sayings.
A un obispo le puede faltar mitra, baclo e hasta catedral, pero nunca le puede faltar el seminario.
A bishop may want a mitre, a crozier, and even a cathedral, but he must never be without a seminary, for upon the seminary depends the future of his diocese. With this profound sense of priestly fatherhood, said Pope Benedict, the bishop was able to guarantee the preparation of his seminarians even while he endured persecutions and bore the suffering of exile.
La preparación de los alumnos, que el ejemplo de San Rafael Guisari Valencia.
May the example of St. Raphael Guisari Valencia, said Pope Benedict, serve to call bishops and priests to consider the promotion of priestly vocations as an integral part of their pastoral programs.
Además del espíritu de pobreza y de la evangelización, el fomento de las vocaciones sacerdotales y religiosas y su formación según el corazón de Cristo.
Well, one priest who has taken Bishop Raphael's message to heart is Father Heriberto Monroy of Mexico City. He is the co-founder of the Eucharistic Marian Missionaries under the sign of the cross, a small community of missionary priests and sisters whose work is based on the teachings of the new Saint Raphael. He told me why St. Raphael is such an inspiration to him and how his courage and faith offer a universal message of hope in a troubled world.
Looking at his picture, he's a man with holiness. Holiness means a great love for God, a great joy for life, because sanctity is not against joy, happiness. His face looks always happy. He's a man of a great faith, great devotion to Our Lady, a man that used to sing, to make music, to sing with the seminarians. And at the time he was so close to people, poor people. He comes from a rich family, we can say, but he was so close to the poor people. He was touched by the necessities of the poor, and that's thanks to his mother. His mother is also in process of beatification. He had a great holy mother.
And he used some of his own family's money to open schools, yeah, and help the poor, didn't he?
Yeah, sometimes some people like him, who comes from a good family, rich family, use their money to create goods for poor people. And yes, for me, that man of that sanctity, happiness, with great love for the people, for the poor, to save souls. That's the image that I have from Guisari Valencia, Father Rafael.
Okay, let's go back. In 1911, they began a campaign of persecution against the Catholic Church there in Mexico. Father Rafael had, by that time, established a congregation. That was dissolved. Mm-hmm. His missionary work was prohibited. But Father Rafael continued his work underground, didn't he? And mm-hmm. How dangerous was it? How dangerous was that period for people, to for religious or even the faithful, to practice their faith freely?
It was hard. At this time, we have the Mexican Revolution going on, mainly on the country. On the city, it's hard to be outside. Sometimes there's a lot of violence in Mexico City. It's not as open as in the country. He used to go to assist people. He used to dress as a poor people, as an Indian, selling goods, mm-hmm. as a doctor, just to be close to the people, to help them to die in God's hands. He didn't care to suffer. He didn't care what he could go through. He was a very brave man to do this, because he knew that the soul was very shared to God, and if he could give a blessing or help that people to reach God, he didn't care what to do. So it's a hard time in Mexico's time.
What would happen to people, or what would have happened to him if he'd been discovered?
Kill. That was a hard time that many priests, mainly foreigners, they was kicked out from the country. He looked like a Spaniard. He looked like a foreigner because he was different from Mexican style. So that helped him also a lot. But if he would have been caught, maybe death would be the last thing for him.
Why were people so afraid of the Catholic Church? I mean, why was it persecuted so much?
It is since the beginning, of Christianity with Jesus Christ.
And in 1911 in Mexico, what was it that really provoked this anger against the Catholic Church, that they wanted to kill the religious and the faithful?
Yeah, because the Catholic Church helps poor people, helps to make unity, create unity among the people. The faith is the only thing that the others cannot kill, and Jesus said it. They can kill the body, but the soul, they cannot touch it. So it's in our mentality of Mexicans, and during the persecution, instead of losing faith, the faith has increased a lot, because that sense that cannot take us what we have from our ancients, our people in the past, that is so hard faith in some people, and said you can kill us, but you cannot take us away from our faith, and that is I think it's afraid of all times. That unity is the strongest weapon on earth. When people is united, is the hardest weapon that any government can have. So if I divide the country in different faith, I weaken the country. And if the country is very well united in one faith, as the Mexican it is, on Our Lady mainly of Guadalupe, that is a people very Catholic, then it's a strong people.
At one point, Father Rafael had to flee Mexico. He had to escape. They were about to catch him, and they wanted to kill him. He went to the U.S., he went to Guatemala, and then he ended up in Cuba. And while he was in Havana, he was a few years there, he received news that the Pope had appointed him to be the Bishop of Veracruz, Mexico. Was the Pope trying to send a message to the authorities in Mexico by appointing him a bishop?
You know, my personal opinion, it can differ from different people, but it's God's acting on the church. I always think God acts on the church, even if the actions of the church can be a little bit hard for our thinking, mainly actual human thinking. For me, only it's God's talking through the church. And it's a way that God always talks. When God selects one to be a very share of his heart, to be a great missionary, they have to go to walk through the cross like Jesus did. We can say after the persecution comes the reward. And God had prepared Monsignor Guisari Valencia with a strong heart to be able to take care of a lot of people, but now more freely. And it's supposed to be freely, but later on, another persecution started in Mexico. So he was the man of the great persecution of the church and on him. So Jesus wanted to print on Guisari Valencia part of Jesus' life, persecution.
So what does he mean to the people of Mexico today? And how big a following does he have? How many people are devoted to him?
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. Just looking at his face, his smiling, slight smiling, happy face, talks about people of God, not only priests, but that he represents a hierarchy. That means hierarchy is like Jesus wants. It's a shepherd that takes care of his sheep with so much care. Monsignor Valencia means for the people of Mexico a priest and also a bishop that is very, very close to the people. It's not the bishop that is inside some walls, but it's the bishop that takes on a horse and rides. Even if he's very sick, he has to ride miles and miles over the mountains, because this Veracruz is a very mountainous country. So he had to walk for hours on a horse to get to a small town. And at the end, he was so happy to reach that point that he always forget what he had suffered to get to that point. And it's what people can touch. That person that represents the church comes to me. Even if he does, if he's sick, he comes from a long distance just to meet me, to talk to me about God, and with a smile, with some sign of care. So that's, I guess, that's the the image of priests and bishops that the world would want all the time, but mainly in this time of the church and the humanity.
Saint Gizar Valencia, he has a universal message for all of Mexico, doesn't he?
Yes. Yes, very clear. And his message is in the letters that he used to write at the end. May God bless you with his holy love. The message is to be like Jean Paul said on his first homily, we can say, don't be afraid to be saints. And Gisari Valencia is saying the same with a smile. Suffering is just a time on earth, but just look at heaven with joy and happiness that one day you will reach that heaven. Also for me is a message to the hierarchy, that it's a message of a great zeal for those souls that we are in charge of, that the world now needs God than any other time on its history. People is losing faith because they don't know God. It's just a point they don't know. At the time they meet God, they meet Jesus, their whole life is changed. So Gisari Valencia is saying to the world, be holy, and holiness is happiness and joy. Because now I think the world is emerging sadness, depressions, but sanctity is happiness. And I wish one day the Pope could call Gisari Valencia the patron of bishops of the world, mainly Mexico, because he's an example to follow. For me, in the hierarchy, me as a priest, is an example to follow. I don't say the church, but me, for me, means an example of a priest that I want to be, that I have to be, because that's my mission.
And a very warm thanks there to Father Heriberto Monroy of Mexico City. He is the co-founder of the Eucharistic Marian Missionaries under the sign of the cross. Tens of thousands of adults convert to Catholicism and are received into the Church during the Easter Vigil ceremony each year, many in the United States alone. And in smaller or greater numbers, this pattern is repeated in other countries throughout the world as people from all religious backgrounds, or none, take the decision to become Catholics. But what factors prompt people to become Catholics in the first place? And how does their conversion change their outlook on life? Susie Hodges talked to three recent Catholic converts to ask them just that.
Chu Sing Tao is Taiwan's ambassador to the Holy See and has just been baptized a Catholic in Rome. He says the inner peace and happiness he saw in the Catholics he met first in Taiwan and then while living and working in Rome help persuade him to take this step.
I was very much impressed by the love and the peace of the priest and the sisters I met before I came to Rome. I visit seven dioceses, and also I visit many schools, hospitals, a center for aged persons, for handicapped persons.
And you were impressed by the dedication of these people?
Yes, by their dedication, by their manner, by their happiness, by the peace they expressed.
And when you came to Rome, what then helped to make you become a Catholic? What more? What other factors were there?
I consider the fact to be appointed as ambassador to the Holy See is a divine grace. Working in Vatican every day, the people whom I met and keep reading about the homily of the Holy Father. So
did the homilies also help?
Yeah, of course. Because the Pope is really wonderful to say in simple words, but with deep thought. Yeah, it helps me a lot. And also living in Vatican, I enjoy enormously to look into the eyes of my interlocutors who are either Vatican officials or people from congregation or missionaries. I got the same feeling as I had during my visit to the Catholic schools, hospitals. They all express the same manner. During my contact with them, I really find those people really happy. The inner peace.
Deciding to become a Catholic is rarely a spur-of-the-moment impulse or a sudden blinding flash of inspiration, but more often than not is a slow and gradual process. Like Ambassador Tu, David Melamatinus, who's a solicitor in London, took many years reflecting on it before he eventually decided to join the Church.
Just a gradual realization of faith in Christ. Once I think you've come to that realization, it's better to go to the stream rather than to some of the other tributaries, which are the other churches. I'm 39 now, and although I've thought about this question periodically over probably the past 15 or 20 years, I'd never felt motivated to do anything about it. It's only now that I felt motivated to do something about it, and it's difficult to say why that motivation has suddenly come on me. But it is a gradual realization.
Rebecca Hong is Chinese-born, but is now married to a British Catholic. She believes she owes her conversion partly to the influence of her husband and his family.
For me personally, it was a gradual process rather than an immediate one where I woke up the next day and I thought, I shall convert to being a Catholic. And it stems from the fact that I have seen or I've been surrounded by quite a lot of inspiring people around me, one of which is obviously my husband, who is a Catholic, and meeting his extended family, who are Catholics as well.
None of the converts I talked to had specifically been brought up as a Christian, and sometimes they had little or no religious background. Although Ambassador Tu has been married for 30 years to a Catholic woman and his two children are also Catholic, he himself was brought up with no religious faith.
When I was a student in high school, I did go to a Protestant church. My father was Protestant, but he didn't practice it. My mother is a Buddhist.
Did they try to make you either become a Protestant or a Buddhist?
They never encouraged me, nor forbidden me from having any faith. They just leave free choice to me.
Like Ambassador Tu, David's parents did not bring him up in any particular faith.
My father is a Catholic and my mother is Jewish, and because they couldn't decide on religion, they left it down to me to choose. I did try to practice Judaism for a while, and although I had the greatest respect for that, for Judaism, it just spiritually didn't appeal to me.
Rebecca, on the other hand, was brought up as a practicing Buddhist by her parents.
I was brought up as a Buddhist by my parents, and you could say that I was a practicing one, but I got disenchanted in my 20s when I was going through a rough time and I was trying to seek for something more spiritual. And I found myself not being able to do that in the Buddhist religion. I have explored many other different religions and finally decided that Catholicism is something which I wanted to try. I was brought up in a convent school for 12 years, and in a way, perhaps at the back of my mind, it's always been something that I was toying with, but just wasn't quite ready.
But how has their conversion to Catholicism changed their views on life? All of the converts believe that becoming a Catholic had changed them for the better as a person. For Ambassador Tu, it was also a question of no longer feeling alone and having the support of his faith in God.
I feel that I gain strength from God. I don't feel alone anymore. I have the spiritual support. So it makes me more careful when I speak out.
And do you think it's changed your attitude towards life in general, your attitude about certain issues?
Yeah, I'm quite new, but I think that being a Catholic, I try my best to follow the path of Christ, I mean, to have more love in dealing with others, to show more concern about others.
Rebecca, too, was convinced that she had changed as a result of her conversion.
I guess the first thing that will come to mind is the fact that I have a clearer conscience now. It might sound strange, but whatever I do, I feel like I need to be accountable to the community, accountable to my family, and importantly, accountable to God. And that's something which I feel very acute and aware of.
David felt that by becoming a Catholic, he had a clearer moral sense of what was right and wrong.
I mean, I was told that when I was baptized, obviously my sins will be forgiven and it's a new birth in Christ. I anticipated that on a theological level, but I actually did mentally, spiritually, almost physically feel different after I'd been baptized. It has made a tremendous difference to how I feel and how I think about things. For instance, in my job, it's made me, I think, perhaps take a more moralistic approach to my work than was previously the case. And in so many other areas of my life, it is having definite ramifications in how I think and how I feel.
But what does Catholicism give them that other faiths cannot provide?
In Catholic Church, you have, I don't know how many saints, probably 1,000 saints. Each saint is a good example. So you have so many saints who not only protect you, and who give you a vivid example that you find a path to follow them, to do your utmost to sanctify yourselves. So this is very concrete.
I believe it gives you a great spiritual strength. As I said before, I did look at Judaism and I didn't feel that same spiritual connection and that same spiritual strength that I get through Catholicism. I think that's the primary thing. I think that's primarily what distinguishes it from other faiths. But also there's a great moralistic backbone to it as well. All religions are moralistic, of course, but in Catholicism, the moralistic aspect of it seems to me to be stronger and more attractive for that reason.
Personally, I think Catholicism gives me a peace of mind, and it makes me believe that I do not need to try and control everything, and that I should just have faith in God that He'll be able to guide me through my life. In my profession, it is very often I find myself having to control what I do and what I say and certain things and events that happen. But after converting, I feel more willing to take a back seat in a way and just let God guide me through my life.
As David put it, becoming a member of the Catholic Church gave him a sense of belonging that he lacked before.
The church has been extremely welcoming. The fact that everyone has been so warm has really made me feel that I've joined a family.
And a very warm thanks there to Susie Hodges for preparing that report. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.